The flip side of self-esteem is called self-efficacy. Your level of self-efficacy is defined as how competent you feel you are to solve your problems and achieve your goals. The more competent you feel you are to solve the problems and difficulties of daily life, the more you like yourself. The more you like yourself, the more confident and competent you become in solving even larger problems and getting even more important results. The determinant of your success. In your work, your problem-solving ability largely determines everything you accomplish. People who are good at solving problems are some of the most valuable and respected people in every area. For this reason, success has been defined as the ability to solve problems. This also means that happiness is the ability to solve problems. Leadership is the ability to solve problems. When you practice self-discipline and self-control in face of the inevitable and unavoidable problems and crises of day-to-day life, you become more competent and effective in everything you do. You will be respected and esteemed by everyone around you. You will experience a tremendous feeling of personal power and competence. In no time at all, you will become one of the most valuable people in your organization. Now, here are 7 action exercises for you. First, solving problems is like solving mathematical equations. It is learnable with practice and repetition. Start by determining the biggest problems facing you today. Write them down. 2. Accept complete responsibility for solving the problems you encounter in your daily work, and then think about the solutions. 3. Define your biggest business or personal problem clearly. Write it down. Then ask, what exactly is the problem? 4. Why is this a problem? Could it be an opportunity in disguise? If so, what opportunity or lesson could this problem contain? 5. What else is the problem? Perhaps the real problem is something else, something you might not want to face. 6. What are all the possible solutions? And what else could be a solution? And 7. Select the best solution that is available to you right now and take action immediately. Part 3. A Self-Discipline and Happiness. Your ultimate goal in life is to achieve your own happiness. No one else can do this for you. This personal desire is the motivation behind almost every behavior. Moreover, happiness is more emotional and spiritual than it is a matter of acquiring material things. In this part, you will learn how the practice of discipline in the most important areas of your life can bring you more joy and satisfaction than perhaps any other quality. Chapter 15. Self-Discipline and Happiness. Harry Emerson Fosdick wrote, "No horse gets anywhere until he is harnessed. No stream or gas drives anything until it is confined. No Niagara is ever turned into light and power until it is tunneled. No life ever grows great until it is focused, dedicated, disciplined." Your ability to achieve your own happiness is the true measure of your success in life. Nothing is more important. Nothing can replace it. If you accomplish everything of a material nature but you are not happy, you've actually failed at fulfilling your potential as a human being. In Chapter 4, I described how human beings are purposeful, striving toward achieving goals and end results. However, behind each goal lies another goal, and then still another goal, until you finally arrive at the primum movum, or first moving force in human life. This always turns out to be the desire to be happy. You can only truly be happy when you practice self-discipline, self-mastery, and self-control. It's only when you feel that you are in complete control of your life that you are truly content. The Law of Control. In my book, Maximum Achievement, I teach the importance of the Law of Control, which states that you feel happy to the degree to which you feel you're in control of your own life. You feel unhappy to the degree to which you feel you are not in control or controlled by other factors or people. Psychologists call this your locus of control. There are 50 years of research and hundreds of books and articles on the subject. They all conclude that stress and unhappiness arise when you feel controlled by outside circumstances. This is explained as the difference between an internal locus of control, happy, and an external locus of control, unhappy. You have an internal locus of control when you feel that you are in charge. You make your own decisions, and what happens to you in life is largely determined by yourself. When you have an internal locus of control, you feel that you are behind the wheel of your own life, and that you are in the driver's seat. You feel that you determine most of what happens to you. As a result, you feel strong, purposeful, and happy. On the other hand, you have an external locus of control to the degree to which you feel that you are not in control or that you have little ability to direct your own life. For example, if you feel that you are controlled by an arbitrary or critical boss, but you cannot afford to lose your job because you have no savings put aside, you experience high levels of stress and anxiety. This causes you to do a poor job, which makes it even more likely that your difficult boss will fire you, and this often brings about exactly the circumstances you fear. Another example is that you may feel you are controlled by a bad marriage or relationship from which you cannot escape. You may feel controlled by your bills, by the money you owe, and your obligations to maintain your standard of living. You may feel that you are controlled by your physical condition or lack of education. Many people feel they are controlled by their past because of a difficult childhood or upbringing, and that there is nothing they can do to change their situation. Many people feel that they are controlled by their own personalities, and that they are not able to change for the better. They say, "That's just the way I am." By saying this, they absolve themselves of all responsibility for exerting the necessary discipline and willpower to make the changes they know they need to make in order to live the kind of life they want to live and to be happy. The key to replacing an external locus of control with an internal locus of control is for you to decide today to take complete charge of your life. Realize and accept that you make your own decisions, and you are where you are and what you are because of yourself. If there's some area in your life with which you're not happy, discipline yourself to do whatever it takes to change the situation. The reason for happiness. It is often the size of the gap between your present situation and the conditions and circumstances that you feel that you need to be happy that determines whether you are happy or unhappy. This is very much a matter of your own evaluation and decision. There's an old saying that success is getting what you want, happiness is wanting what you get. When your income and your life are consistent with your goals and expectations, and you are content with your situation, you feel happy. If, on the other hand, for any reason your current situation is different from what you really want and expect, you will be discontented and unhappy. This state of contentment can be constantly changing. When you start off in your career, an income of $50,000 per year can seem like a huge achievement. But once you reach this goal, you start to be unhappy because you are not earning $100,000 or more. Some people are unhappy earning $1 million a year. Happiness is a byproduct. The interesting thing about happiness is that it is not a goal that you can aim at and achieve in and of itself. Happiness is a byproduct that comes to you when you are engaged in doing something that you really enjoy while in the company of people who you like and respect. Earl Nightingale, perhaps the most famous and respected radio commentator on success in history, said that happiness is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. Whenever you feel that you are moving step by step toward something that is important to you, toward your most important goals, you automatically feel happy. You feel satisfied and content. You feel a tremendous sense of personal growth and well-being. 5 ingredients of happiness. Self-discipline is essential to happiness. Self-discipline requires both that you determine clearly what happiness means to you, and also that you work progressively each day toward the achievement of that ideal condition. In my experience and teachings, I found that there are 5 ingredients to happiness. A shortfall in any one of these areas can cause stress, unhappiness, and a feeling of being out of control. 5 ingredients of happiness. 1. Health and energy. This is perhaps the most important element of a good life. We strive for it all our lives. It is only when you enjoy high levels of pain-free health and a continuous flow of energy that you feel truly happy. In many cases, health is a deficiency need. This means that you do not think about your health very much until you are deprived of it. For example, you do not think about your teeth until you have a toothache. You do not think about your body until you have aches and pains of some kind. You must use discipline and willpower throughout your life to achieve and maintain high levels of health and fitness. Chapters 16 and 17 cover these in more detail. The second ingredient of happiness is happy relationships. Fully 85% of your happiness or unhappiness will come from your relationships with other people. As Aristotle said, man is a social animal. We are designed to function in society, working and living with other people at every stage of our lives. Your ability to enter into and maintain high-quality relationships with your spouse, children, friends, colleagues, and others is the true measure of the quality of your personality and your level of mental health. People with high levels of self-esteem and self-respect get along better with others and have much happier lives. One of our biggest mistakes is to take our relationships for granted, especially our most important ones. We often don't think about them until there's a problem, and then we think of nothing else. The third ingredient of happiness is meaningful work. To be truly happy, you must be fully engaged with life. You must be doing things that keep you active and give you a sense of fulfillment. If you're making a living, you must be doing work that you enjoy, do well, and for which you are well paid. People are only truly happy when they feel they are making a contribution of some kind, that they are putting in more than they're taking out. You need to feel that what you do really makes a difference in the lives and work of other people. In studies of employee motivation, employers think that people are primarily motivated by money and benefits. But when employees are surveyed, the three factors that motivate them the most turn out to be challenging and interesting work, opportunities for growth and advancement, and pleasant coworkers. One of your most important responsibilities to yourself is to find the right job for you, and then, once you have it, throw your whole heart into it. If for any reason you don't feel like putting your whole heart into your work, it may be lacking one or more of the three essentials to a positive workplace. It may be a sign that this is not the right place for you. The fourth key to happiness is financial independence. Some of the greatest fears we experience are those of loss, failure, and poverty. We fear being destitute, without funds, and dependent on others. One of your chief responsibilities to yourself is to work toward financial independence and financial freedom throughout your life. The happiest of all people are those who have reached the point at which they no longer worry about money. This is not something you can leave to chance, but rather something that requires deliberate, purposeful action and tremendous self-discipline to achieve. Whenever you feel that there is a big gap between where you are today financially and where you would ideally like to be, you experience stress, worry, and unhappiness. The fifth ingredient of happiness is self-actualization. This is the feeling that you are becoming everything you are capable of becoming. This occurs when you feel you are realizing more and more of your true potential. Abraham Maslow is best known for his hierarchy of needs. He determined that people have both deficiency needs and being needs. People strive either to compensate for their deficiencies or to realize their potentials. He concluded that you only begin to evolve and develop to the highest levels possible for you when your deficiency needs are first satisfied. Deficiency needs. Your first deficiency need is for safety and survival. Satisfying this need requires that you have sufficient food, water, clothing, and accommodation to preserve your life and well-being. If for any reason your safety or survival is threatened, you'll become totally preoccupied with satisfying this need. You will experience tremendous stress, and you will be completely unhappy until you are safe once more. For example, think about being in a life-threatening situation. The second deficiency need that Maslow identified is the need for security. This need embraces financial, emotional, and physical security. You need to have enough money to provide for yourself, security in your relationships at work and at home, and physical security to assure that you are not in danger of any kind. If your security needs are threatened, you become completely preoccupied with them. For example, think about losing your job suddenly. How would you feel? The third deficiency need that Maslow identified is belongingness. Each person has a need to be in social relationships with others, both at home and at work. You need to be recognized and accepted by other people in your world. Each person needs to be comfortable in his or her relationships with others and seen and accepted as part of a team or group. Self-esteem needs. Once you have achieved a sufficient level of each of these basic needs, safety, security, and belongingness, you then turn to satisfy the higher needs for self-esteem and self-worth, your being needs. Your self-esteem is the core of your personality and largely determines how you feel about everything that happens to you. Everything you do in life is either to increase your self-esteem or to protect it from being diminished. Your self-esteem, how you feel about yourself and how much you like and value yourself, determines your happiness more than any other single factor. Your self-esteem comes from many factors. When you are liked and accepted by others, living consistently with your highest values, doing a good job and being recognized for it, and moving progressively toward the achievement of your goals and ideals, then you naturally feel happy and satisfied. You feel valuable and very much in control. The highest human need. The highest need that Maslow identified was for self-actualization. He concluded that less than 2% of the population ever reaches this height of personal fulfillment. Most people remain so preoccupied with their deficiency needs and protecting or enhancing their self-esteem and their ego needs that they give little thought or effort to self-actualization. But it is only when you realize that you have tremendous personal potential and begin striving to do, be, and have more than ever before in some area that you begin to experience self-actualization and true happiness. The happiest of all people are those who feel that they are doing something worthwhile and important with their lives. They feel they are stretching and moving beyond anything they've ever done before. People devoted to self-actualization may be writing books or creating works of art. They may be climbing mountains or competing in sports. They may be building businesses or scaling the heights of their professions. The wonderful thing about self-actualization needs is that they can never be completely satisfied. As you continually strive throughout your life to be and have and do more than ever before, you experience a steady flow of happiness and contentment. You feel that you are becoming more and more of what you were truly meant to become. Never be satisfied. In each of these areas, whenever you exert self-discipline and willpower to overcome the tendency to take the easy way, you feel happier about yourself. When you take a leap of faith in the direction of your dreams, and then discipline yourself to keep going in spite of all obstacles and hardships, you feel powerful. Your self-esteem and self-confidence increases, and then as you move step by step toward your ideals, you feel genuinely happy. In the next chapter, you will learn how to incorporate self-discipline into your daily health habits to assure that you live a long, happy, healthy life. Now here are some action exercises for you. 1. Identify the areas of your life in which you feel the happiest and the most in control. How could you expand them? 2. Identify the areas of your life in which you feel controlled by other people or factors. What could you do to resolve these situations? 3. Identify those areas in your life where there is a gap between your current levels of accomplishment and what you would really like to achieve. What could you do to bridge these gaps? 4. Identify the most pressing needs you have today that are not being fulfilled. How could you begin to satisfy these deficiency needs? 5. Identify those activities that give you the greatest feeling of personal happiness, your peak experiences in life. What could you do to increase these moments of happiness? 6. Identify those areas in life where you feel the most discontented. What steps could you take immediately to resolve these feelings of discontent? 7. Define happiness for yourself. What does it mean? What would have to happen for you to feel truly happy? What could you do immediately to create this situation? Chapter 16, Self-Discipline and Personal Health. Abraham Joshua Heschel said, "Self-respect is the root of discipline. The sense of dignity grows with the ability to say no to oneself." More people are living longer and better today than ever before in human history, and your goal should be to be one of those people. There's no area in which self-discipline is more important than in your practices regarding your health. Your number one goal for yourself should be to live as long and as well as you possibly can. This requires lifelong self-discipline with your health habits. And as mentioned in Chapter 15, good health is one of the ingredients of overall happiness. The average life expectancy for males today, 2009, is 76.8 years. For females, 79.8 years, or approximately 80 years. And this number is increasing each year. This means that about 50% of the population will die below the age of 80, and about 50% will die above the age of 80. Your goal should be to defy the averages and live to age 90, 95, or even longer. Living a long life. Today, most causes of early death that had shortened life in the past have been eliminated in the industrialized world. Diseases such as tuberculosis, polio, malaria, cholera, typhus, and others have been wiped out through sanitation and modern medicine. The predominant causes of early deaths today are heart disease, cancer of all kinds, diabetes, and traffic deaths, all of which are subject to your control to a certain extent. You cannot predict or protect against the unpredictable, like random accidents, but you can use your self-discipline to control the controllable in your life. Seven key health habits. The Alameda study, covering many thousands of people for more than 20 years, concluded there were seven key health habits that contributed the most to long life. Number one, eat regularly, rather than fasting, starving, or gorging. Eat normal, healthy meals, preferably 5 or 6 times per day, with your last meal fully 3 hours before you go to sleep. Number two, eat lightly. Overeating makes you tired and sluggish, whereas eating lightly makes you feel healthy and alert. As Thomas Jefferson wrote, "No one ever regretted eating too little after a meal." Number three, don't snack between meals. When you eat, your body has to break down and digest the foods in your stomach so that they can move into your small intestine. This requires 4 to 5 hours. If you put food in on top of food that you have already eaten, the digestive process must start over again, with part of your food at one stage of digestion and another part of your food at another stage. This leads to upset stomach, heartburn, drowsiness, especially in the afternoon, and constipation. Number four, exercise regularly. The ideal is about 30 minutes a day or 200 minutes per week. You can achieve this by walking, running, swimming, and/or using exercise equipment. You should fully articulate every joint every day. Number five, wear a seatbelt. Right up to age 35, the most common cause of premature death is traffic accidents. Number six, don't smoke. Smoking is correlated with 32 different illnesses, including lung cancer, esophageal cancer, throat cancer, stomach cancer, heart disease, and a variety of other ailments. And the seventh key to long life is to drink alcohol in moderation. Studies show that 1 to 2 glasses of wine per day aid digestion and seem to be beneficial to your overall health. Anything in excess of that can lead to all kinds of problems, including overeating, traffic accidents, personality problems, and antisocial behavior. Each of these seven factors that contribute to long life are completely a matter of self-discipline. These seven factors are a matter of choice. They are actions that you can choose to take or not take deliberately. They are completely under your control. The 5 P's of excellent health. In my personal development seminars, we teach the 5 P's of excellent health. Number one, proper weight. This requires the regular exercise of discipline and willpower in order to achieve your proper weight and then to maintain it throughout your life. But the payoff is tremendous. You look good, feel good, and generally feel more positive and in control of your life. Number 2, proper diet. As Benjamin Franklin said, eat to live rather than live to eat. According to studies of Olympic athletes from more than 120 countries, the three factors their diets have in common are: first, lean source protein. Second, a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. And third, lots of water, about 8 glasses per day. When you begin this Olympic diet, you will feel more alert, awake, and aware all day long. Number 3 of the 5 P's is proper exercise. The most important exercise for long life is aerobic exercise. This requires that you get your heart rate up to a high level for 30 to 60 minutes 3 times per week. You can achieve this through brisk walking, running, cycling, swimming, or cross-country skiing. Exercise physiologists have determined that the exercise effect clicks in at about 25 minutes of vigorous exercise. At this point, your brain releases endorphins that give you a feeling of elation, or what is called a runner's high. This natural drug produced by your body can become addictive in a very positive way. People who develop the habit of regular, vigorous exercise find that it becomes easier and easier to do. They begin to look forward to the feeling of happiness they enjoy as the result of exercising aerobically. 4 is proper rest. This is very important. More than 60% of adults do not get enough sleep. They are suffering from what is called a sleep deficit. They go to bed a little bit too late, sleep poorly, arise a little bit too early, and go through the day in a form of fog. This phenomenon of not being sufficiently rested leads to poor performance, more mistakes, industrial accidents, car crashes, short tempers, personality problems, and many other difficulties. If you're living and working a normal life, you require about 8 hours of sleep each night. If you get only 6 or 7 hours of sleep when you actually require 8, you begin to build up this sleep deficit. By Thursday or Friday, when you get up in the morning, the first thing you think of is how soon you can go back to sleep again that night. When you start thinking about going to sleep again, at the moment that you arise, you know that you are not getting enough sleep. In addition to 8 hours of sleep per night, you need regular breaks from work, both weekends and vacations. When you take time off from work, you allow your mental and emotional batteries to recharge. After a 2 or 3 day weekend, when you go back to work, you will feel fully rested and ready to perform at your best. The 5th P is proper attitude. This is perhaps the most important of all. The quality that is most predictive of health, happiness, and long life is optimism. As you become more optimistic about yourself and your life, your health will also be better in every area. People who are positive and optimistic usually have stronger immune systems, and as a result, they are seldom sick. They seldom get colds or flu. They bounce back quickly from hard work or fatigue. An optimistic person has a built-in Teflon shield against many of the diseases and ailments that affect the average person. Get your weight under control. The biggest single problem with self-discipline that people have today is overeating and becoming overweight. More than 60% of Americans are officially overweight, and more than 30% are obese, which is defined as being more than 30% above their normal weight. There's no area in which self-discipline is more necessary than in getting your weight under control and then keeping it under control for the rest of your life. You've heard it said that diets don't work. What this really means is that when you starve yourself to lose weight, you'll tend to put the weight back on almost as quickly as you lost it. There are many reasons for this. Each person has a certain metabolic rate. This is the rate at which you burn energy. This metabolic rate is set over the course of your lifetime by the amount of food you eat relative to the amount of exercise you do to work it off. In addition to your metabolic rate, you have what is called a set point. This is where your weight is set, like a thermostat, and to which it returns no matter how much you take off as the result of crash dieting. Change your set point. To lose weight permanently, you must change your set point to a lower number. To achieve this, the first thing you do is create a clear mental image of how you will look when you are at your ideal weight. Get a picture out of a magazine of someone who has the body you want to have, and then paste your photo where their face appears. You then begin a gradual process of changing the quality and quantity of what you eat permanently, with no intention of ever going back. Be prepared to work on this permanent change for at least a year. Remember, if you are overweight, it has taken you many years to get to where you are today. Be prepared to invest a lot of time in getting back. The fatal flaw in dieting. Many people diet and lose weight with the idea that as soon as they have dropped a certain number of pounds, they can reward themselves by going out and having a fabulous meal or consuming unlimited desserts. In other words, they use the idea of filling up on foods as the reward for losing weight in the first place. This approach is doomed to failure. Instead, set up a reward system for yourself that does not include food. Decide instead to buy yourself new clothes that will only fit you at your ideal weight. Take yourself and your family on a vacation where you engage in fun activities. Make a bet with someone that you will take off the weight and keep it off for 1 year. The formula for permanent weight loss. The key to perfect health can be summarized in 5 words. Eat less and exercise more. The only way that you can lose weight permanently is to burn off more calories than you consume. There's no other way. Moreover, you can only do this over an extended period of time, especially if you've allowed yourself to put on a lot of excess weight. In my program, Thinking Big, we teach the importance of avoiding the 3 white poisons, sugar, salt, and flour. Get rid of sugar. To lose weight permanently and to enjoy high levels of health and energy, you should eliminate all simple sugars from your diet. Simple sugars are contained in candy, cake, pastries, desserts, soft drinks, canned fruits, sugar in your coffee, and all other forms of sugar that people consume in large quantities every day. The fact is that you require no additional sugar to enjoy superb levels of physical health, simply by eliminating all sugar and sugar products from your life by going cold turkey on sugar, you'll begin to lose as much as 1 pound per day. Pass on the salt. In addition, you should eliminate all additional salt from your diet. Although the average American gets sufficient salt in all the different foods he eats, he consumes an extra 20 pounds of salt each year by eating foods with high salt content and by then adding additional salt to meals. When you consume excess salt, your body retains water in order to hold that salt in suspension. When you stop consuming excess salt and simultaneously drink 8 glasses of water per day, your body releases all the excess fluid and you can actually experience weight drops of as much as 4 or 5 pounds in the first day. Avoid white flour products. Finally, eliminate all white flour products from your diet. This means all breads, pastries, pastas, rice, buns, rolls, and anything else made with white flour. White flour is actually an inert substance from which all nutrients have been removed and then bleached out. When you see the words enriched white bread, they mean that the white flour, which is essentially a dead food material, has been fortified with artificial chemical vitamins, almost all of which are then destroyed in the baking process. There is no food value in a white flour product. A simple change of diet. Not long ago, I got a letter from a 32-year-old man in Florida. He told me that he had read my books and listened to my programs for years. He had achieved a higher level of financial and career success than he ever imagined possible, but he was still carrying an extra 20 pounds of weight that he could not get rid of, no matter what he did. Then one day he listened to Thinking Big, and he heard my comments on the 3 white poisons. Fortunately, he was both disciplined and determined. He used his willpower to slam the brakes on these 3 foods and discontinue them completely. He said that what happened next was nothing short of miraculous. Within 6 months, he had dropped 22 pounds. When he wrote to me, he had kept them off for 2 years. He said that he looked different, felt different, was more attractive to women, and had higher levels of self-confidence and self-esteem. His whole life had improved since he dropped the excess weight. Live to be 100. Your goal in life should be to enjoy the highest levels of health and energy possible. This requires that you eat the right foods and fewer of them. It requires that you get regular exercise and move every joint of your body every single day. To enjoy superb physical health, you must get lots of rest and recreation. Now, here are 7 action exercises for you. 1. Idealize with regard to your health. If you could wave a magic wand and make your health perfect in every way, how would it be different from today? 2. Resolve to make the rest of your life the best of your life. What is the first thing you should change or do? 3. Get a complete medical examination and ask your doctor for advice on how to enjoy superb levels of physical health. Then, follow that advice. 4. Determine your ideal weight and set it as a goal. Use the goal-setting process you learned in Chapter 4 to make a plan to achieve it and keep it there for life. 5. Use mindstorming, described in Chapter 4 as well, and write out a list of at least 20 answers to the question, what can I do every day to enjoy superb levels of health and energy? 6. Review the health habits and research discussed in this chapter and give yourself a grade ranging from 1 to 10 on how well you are practicing them. 7. Decide on one specific action that you're going to take immediately to ensure that you live to be age 80, 90, and beyond. Chapter 17, Self-Discipline and Physical Fitness. Vince Lombardi said, "Mental toughness is many things and rather difficult to explain. Its qualities are sacrifice and self-denial. Also, and most importantly, it is combined with a perfectly disciplined will that refuses to give in. It is a state of mind that you could call character in action." For you to achieve and maintain high levels of physical fitness requires a lifetime of self-discipline and willpower. The good news is that physical fitness is its own reward. Not only do you feel good while you're exercising, but you feel wonderful about yourself the rest of the time. If your goal is to live a long, healthy, happy life and be fit and trim physically, there's no substitute for regular exercise. Fortunately, you do not have to train for the Olympics or a triathlon to enjoy superb levels of physical well-being. By building exercise and physical training into your daily routine, you can achieve physical fitness just by making a few small modifications to your lifestyle. Listen to the experts. Physical fitness specialists generally agree that you need to exercise 200 to 300 minutes per week to enjoy the maximum levels of physical well-being that are possible for you. This means that you need to exercise between 30 and 60 minutes, 5 to 7 times each week. At the low end, if you simply went for a 30-minute walk each morning before you started off for work, or each evening when you got home from work, as well as each weekend day, you'd be one of the healthiest people in our society. If you increase your exercise level to 60 minutes each time, 5 days per week, you'll be in the top 1 or 2% of physically fit people in the world today. Get started first thing. The best time to exercise is first thing in the morning. People who get up each morning and exercise for 30 to 60 minutes are much more likely to make exercise a permanent part of their daily routine. On the other hand, people who put off exercising until later in the day, until after work, almost invariably find that they are too tired or have too many other things to do. They procrastinate on exercising until another day, which often never comes. It takes tremendous discipline to get into and follow a regular exercise routine. But it's much easier if you can discipline yourself to get up in the morning and start exercising immediately. Trick yourself. Many people, including myself, trick themselves into exercising in the morning by putting their exercise clothes right next to the bed so that they trip over them when they get up. Before they are even awake, they find themselves pulling on their exercise clothes and running shoes and starting off around the block. Before they even know what has happened, they are halfway into their exercise routine, their heart rate is up, their lungs are puffing away, and they're feeling good about themselves. Whenever people come back from a morning run or any other form of morning exercise, they're always happy and smiling. This is because of the exercise effect that kicks in after 25 or 30 minutes. Their brains release endorphins and they feel exhilarated. Increase your intelligence. People who engage in aerobic exercise first thing in the morning have been shown to be brighter, more creative, and more intelligent throughout the day. They actually score higher on intelligence tests, and they seem to come up with more ideas to help them do their work better during the course of the day. The reason for this is obvious. When you engage in aerobic exercise first thing in the morning, you drive hyperoxygenated blood into your cerebral cortex, the part of your brain that you use for thinking, analyzing, and decision-making. This makes you wide awake and alert from first thing in the morning and then for several hours afterward. When you exercise as soon as you get up, you kick your metabolic rate into a higher gear. As a result, your body continues to burn calories all day long. You continue to lose weight for several hours after exercising. When you exercise first thing in the morning or any time during the day, you become hungry. However, because you are working out your body in such a healthy way, you will have a natural appetite for healthy foods. You will have little or no desire for sweet foods or desserts. Make exercise a part of your lifestyle. One of the best things you can do to achieve and maintain high levels of physical fitness is to join a gym or a health club and attend regular exercise classes. You can even pay a little more and get yourself a personal trainer who puts you through an exercise regimen two or more times per week. You're much more likely to discipline yourself to start and maintain a fitness routine if you have someone who is expecting you to be at class or monitoring you on a regular basis to make sure that you follow the exercise program to which you committed. Many people today are hiring personal trainers. A personal trainer can either come to your home or place of work, or you can go to a gym that has personal trainers on staff who will work with you on the specific equipment you want to use. People who use personal trainers are almost universally delighted with the results. They find that being accountable to a trainer exerts a positive influence on them, causing them to eat less so they have less weight to burn off and to work harder when they exercise so that they can earn the approval of the trainer. Join an organized sport. Organized sports are a wonderful way to achieve and maintain high levels of physical fitness. They're far more demanding in terms of time and schedule, but the payoff is often extraordinary. If you're a member of a sports league, whether that be baseball, tennis, football, soccer, racquetball, or anything else, and you have a coach or a trainer that you work with on a regular basis, you tend to be more focused and disciplined. You'll exercise more often and more vigorously, and you'll be fitter and trimmer than most other people. Develop new and better habits. Unfortunately, physical fitness and sports training require high levels of discipline, and few people are capable of starting and continuing this kind of exercise regimen. For better or worse, whatever you do repeatedly becomes a habit, and many people get out of the habit of regular exercise and never go back. Fortunately, it's never too late. At any time, you can decide that you are going to enjoy high levels of physical fitness. You can make a decision right now to start a physical fitness routine of some kind, and then set it as a personal test or challenge to see if you have the willpower and discipline to follow through on your resolution. You can start today. Some years ago, there was a 68-year-old woman living in a senior citizen's home who had never given much thought to physical exercise. She had worked hard, raised her family, become a grandmother, and was now living comfortably in a senior citizen's residence. One day she saw a television special on jogging. During this special, they interviewed a couple of people in their 50s and 60s who were running marathons. Some of them had started running later in life. This 68-year-old woman decided that she wanted to run a marathon as well. She drove down to a nearby store and brought the proper shoes for walking and running. That day she began her exercise regimen by walking around the neighborhood where she lived. Over the next few weeks she walked ever greater distances. She bought books and sought advice on how to exercise and train her legs for running. After 2 months she began jogging a little as part of her walking routine. After 6 months she began running as part of her walking and jogging routine. By the end of the first year she had run in a mini marathon in her local community. By the time she was 75, she had completed 10 26.4-mile marathons and 2 50-mile cross-country marathons. And the most remarkable thing was that she had never run before the age of 68. So what's your excuse? If this 68-year-old woman could start exercising so late in life, why can't you? One of the greatest guarantors that you will live a long, happy life, being bright, alert, and full of energy, is that you begin a regular physical training program 4 or 5 days per week and continue it for the rest of your life. When you exert your self-discipline and willpower to achieve a high level of physical fitness and then maintain it year after year, you'll feel terrific about yourself. In the next chapter, you'll learn how self-discipline in marriage can have a wonderful effect in assuring a long life of happiness and fulfillment with another person. Now here are 7 action exercises for you. First, today is the day. Make a decision that you're going to achieve the best physical condition of your life in the months ahead, and then take action immediately. Number 2, get a complete medical examination so that you know your condition and limits before you begin. Number 3, start walking 30 minutes each day, preferably first thing in the morning or, if not in the morning, right after work. 4. Join a gym or health club. Pay for a year and make an appointment with yourself to work out 5 times a week, 60 minutes each time. 5. Hire a personal trainer and have him or her guide you through an exercise program that includes aerobics, strength, and flexibility exercises each week. Number 6. Invest in a treadmill, a life cycle, or an elliptical machine and put it in front of your television so that you can exercise as a part of your home and family life. And number 7, start gradually and work up slowly, resolving to exercise for several weeks before you notice a major difference. Be patient, persistent, and determined. Chapter 18, Self-Discipline and Marriage. It is better to control yourself than to win 1,000 battles. Then the victory is yours. It cannot be taken from you, not by angels or demons, heaven or hell. Buddha. Your ability to enter into a long-term loving relationship is an important measure of your character and personality. Men and women are born to be 2 halves that make up 1 whole. They have different qualities and characteristics that, when properly combined, achieve completion and the balance and harmony that nature demands. The foundational qualities for marriage and loving relationships are trust and respect. Men and women can have many disagreements over the course of their married life together, but as long as the trust and respect between them endures, the marriage can go on indefinitely. If ever one or the other party can no longer trust the other or no longer respects the other, the relationship is finished. Many marriages end in divorce, and many divorced people have multiple marriages, each of which ends in failure. Yet some people get married once and stay married contentedly for the rest of their lives. Why is this? The key to a happy marriage. Perhaps the most important reason for a happy marriage is compatibility. The 2 people are ideally balanced with each other, with each one possessing complementary qualities and characteristics that combine comfortably to form a perfect balance. People often say that opposites attract. This is a misunderstanding. Opposites attract in only one area, and that is temperament. You will always be most compatible with a person who has an opposite or counterbalancing temperament to your own. For example, if you are outgoing and extroverted, you'll be most comfortable with a person who is more reserved and self-contained. If you are voluble and expressive, you'll be most compatible with a person who is relaxed and a good listener. Nature demands a balance in temperament for 2 people to be compatible and happy together. Birds of a feather. In all other areas, especially in the area of values, it is similarities that attract. Birds of a feather do flock together. You will always be attracted to people and most compatible with those who have the greatest number of fundamental values in common with yourself. All of love of any kind is a response to value. We love what we most value both in ourselves and others. When a couple is truly happy together, they seem to have very much the same values regarding family, money, ethics, work, children, politics, religion, and other people. People will often point out that there are happy couples who vote for different parties or come from different religious backgrounds. But the critical issue in balance and harmony revolves around the intensity with which a person values something. This intensity determines if a person is absolute and unbending or relaxed and flexible in his or her adherence to a particular belief about a particular part of life. People can love and live together happily for many years, even though they support different political parties, as long as political belief is not so important to either of them that it takes precedence over more important elements of their relationship, such as children, family, and values. Love is our greatest need in life. It is said that everything we do in life is either to get love or to compensate for a lack of love. Psychologists generally agree that the root cause of personality problems in adult life can be traced back to love withheld in infancy and childhood. People need love like roses need rain. Without sufficient love and acceptance, individuals exhibit all kinds of personality and physical problems. It is only possible to be happy when your needs for love are completely fulfilled. A happy marriage requires tremendous self-discipline and self-control. Love requires self-denial and sacrifice. When you're truly in love with another person, that person's happiness and well-being becomes more important than your own. You are willing to pay whatever price and make whatever sacrifice in order to ensure the well-being of the person you love. In the Christian Bible, in a letter to the Corinthians, the Apostle Paul says, "Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love avengeth not itself, is not puffed up. Love doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not his own, is not easily provoked, and thinketh no evil. Love rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Love beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never fails." Different strokes require tolerance and understanding. Each person is an individual with unique and special characteristics that make him or her different from all other people. Each person has different ideas, tastes, desires, hopes, dreams, and expectations. Each person has had different experiences and developed different ways of seeing and dealing with the world around him or her. When you come together with another person in a loving relationship, no matter how close you feel to each other, and no matter how compatible you may be in many ways, you will still have areas of disagreement, dissatisfaction, and discontent. This is normal and natural, and something to be worked through by practicing self-discipline and self-control whenever these differences occur. Self-discipline in a relationship requires that you be completely honest and open, that you be yourself and never try to be someone or something else. Self-discipline and honesty require that you state clearly what you are thinking and feeling without anger or irritation, and that you listen calmly and patiently to the feelings, thoughts, and opinions of the other person. Male-female communication styles. Men and women are different in many ways. According to MRI scans, when men communicate, they use only 2 centers of their brains. When women communicate, they use 7 centers of their brains. It is as though men have 2 headlights with which to communicate, whereas a woman's brain is like a fully lit Christmas tree. Men can only process 1 sensory input at a time, whereas women can process multiple sensory inputs. When a man is watching television, he does not see or hear anything else, including words spoken to him from the side or behind. He becomes totally fixated on the visual images and words on the screen. When a man is driving a car, he has to turn down the radio to read the map. He has to turn down the television or radio to answer the telephone. He cannot read and listen or watch at the same time. Men can do many things extremely well, but they can only do 1 thing at a time. Men tend to be very focused. Women, on the other hand, can talk, make dinner, watch television, read the day's mail, and talk to her children or husband all at once. They are multidimensional and can process several inputs simultaneously. They can talk and listen at the same time and be aware of what other people around them are doing and saying. Women are relationship experts. They are very sensitive to other people. When a man and a woman attend a social gathering, within 10 minutes the woman will have done an analysis and assessment of the situation of each of the other people in the room, especially couples. In contrast, the man accompanying the woman will have noticed little or nothing. This is because men are simple and straightforward in their thinking, whereas women are complex, aware of small details, and extremely sensitive to the dynamics and nuances of the relationships of the people around them. A man can call his wife on the phone and say, "Hello." Although she has only heard one word, she will immediately ask, "What's wrong?" She can pick up a wealth of meaning and emotion from a single word on the phone or a single glance or look when he walks in the door. Relationship building takes effort. Because of the many differences between men and women, it takes tremendous discipline to build and maintain a long-term, loving, and happy relationship. Perhaps the most important area of mutual compatibility has to do with the discipline of listening. It's only when two people take the time to listen closely and carefully to each other when they speak that the lines of communication stay open, and this is when love and harmony continue in the relationship. There are 4 simple disciplines of effective listening. They are mostly of importance to men who are notoriously poor listeners, especially with the women in their lives. This is not because they're not interested. It's simply because their minds are focused on something else and they are easily distracted. The disciplines of listening. First, listen attentively. The first discipline is to listen attentively without interrupting. Listen as though the other person is about to reveal a great secret or the winning lottery number, and you will hear it only once. When she wants to talk to you, if you're a man, put aside all possible distractions. Turn off the television or radio. Put down the newspaper or mail. Face her directly, lean slightly forward, and concentrate single-mindedly on what she is saying. The book His Needs, Her Needs points out that the most important need that a woman has from a man is affection. Affection is expressed by paying total attention to her when she speaks. Since you always pay attention to what you most value, when you pay close attention to another person while she speaks, you tell that person that she is of great value to you. This satisfies the deepest subconscious needs of a woman to feel valuable, important, and respected. Pause before replying. The second discipline of listening is to pause before replying. Take a few seconds to carefully consider what he or she has said. When you pause, you avoid the risk of interrupting the other person if she is just reformulating her thoughts. You tell her that you value what she said and that you're giving her words careful consideration. Another advantage of pausing, of allowing a silence in the conversation, is that it enables you to hear not only what was said, but also what was not said, or what was said between the lines. The actual message soaks into a deeper level of your mind, enabling you to understand better and to therefore respond with greater awareness and sensitivity. Ask for clarification. The third discipline of effective listening is to question for clarification. Never assume that you automatically know what the other person is thinking or feeling. Instead, if you're at all unclear, simply ask, "How do you mean?" or "How do you mean exactly?" It is when you ask questions and seek clarity and meaning that you demonstrate to the other person that you really care about what he or she is saying and that you are genuinely interested in understanding how he or she thinks and feels. Feed it back. The fourth discipline of effective listening is for you to feed back what the other person has said and paraphrase it in your own words. This is the acid test of listening.